Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Berkshire-based actor, voiceover artist, comedian, and audiobook narrator and producer Allison Larkin joins us again with the next chapter in her tumultuous, marvelous journey finding her way to love before she meets her soulmate, Bhima, and after she loses him. Her book, Grief, a Comedy, is available now. Allison, welcome back to The Roundtable. It's lovely to see you.
It's lovely to see you, too.
Your book is out. It's available. You've been working on it for years. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm very pleased that it's out and that my task is complete. I don't know if you remember, but
this task was set to you by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I do remember. we should tell the people.
We should tell the hello people. Well, what happened was that I fell deeply in love in my 50s for the first time in my life. I had avoided love my whole life because I was afraid of the worst happening, possibly for adoption-related reasons. The key to dealing with a fear of abandonment is to date people you don't like. So if they do leave you, it doesn't matter. Then I fell in love in the Berkshires with a wonderful climate scientist from South India. And then he died. But then instead of wanting to give up, I found to my utter astonishment that I wanted to live and love more fully than ever, and I didn't understand it. And I had been friends with Archbishop Desmond Tutu years before, and he found out what had happened and he emailed me. And he said, first of all, I want you to know that I have asked God to find you another soulmate. And she said she is on the case. Mm-hmm. But first, you must do everything you can to make sure that this story is told as widely as possible because it will bring hope to a world that badly needs it. So you can't ignore Archbishop Desmond Tutu. So I wrote a show called Grief, a Comedy that previewed in the Berkshires at Barrington Stage last summer and then went to the Edinburgh Fringe and then went to London and it sold out and it was a hit. And it was a one-woman show in which I told this story. And then I wrote a follow-up book also called Grief, a Comedy, which starts 6 weeks after Bhima died when he showed up at my kitchen table, determined to help me find love again. It's imaginary, of course, or is it? And it has been a very long process doing my... I mean, you have to do what Archbishop Desmond Tutu tells you.
I think you do. One must. Well, I don't have any personal experience with it, of course.
You're lucky,
but it feels important.
He's a bit of a taskmaster. And it was hard work. But so the answer is I'm thrilled. And people are writing to me telling me that it is really helping them to find joy after loss. And I had an email yesterday from a woman that I didn't know well who had read it, who said that her husband died about 4 years ago and that it gave her permission to find love again. And she's met somebody who she thinks she really may truly be in love with. And so I'm thinking, well, then it's been worth it.
For that one impact,
yeah,
the work has been worth it. But you're very likely, as you know, impacting many more people, which was the task Archbishop Desmond Tutu set out for you. What did you learn about the story, your story, and what you wanted to put to the page as you brought the show around the world ultimately?
I found out that everybody has deep loss. It wasn't just me.
Of course.
And I realized that in this world, which is so divided, perhaps it has never been more divided, we must find our common humanity. So there I am in Edinburgh and London doing this show about love. I mean, it's a comedy, it's about love, it's about loss, it's about finding great joy after loss and in the midst of pain. And there are all these people who have not necessarily identically the same story, but have also lost people. And I learned that I wasn't on my own. And we would go to the bar, as you do after a show, and sort of speak with each other. And I would have people that I didn't know. I'd say to them, do you mind if I ask you if you have a continuing relationship with your loved one after they've died? And one person, a woman, bursts into tears and says, thank you so much for asking the question. And another woman says, well, I haven't talked about this before, but since you ask, my husband Wilf died 4 years ago, but I set the table every night for him and we have a right old chat. And suddenly there we are all talking about the fact that while it is true, of course, that the body goes, the love doesn't. And that we can, if we allow ourselves, connect with people who are no longer with us physically. And it's been exhilarating. And now I get to go on these podcasts and radio programs and I get to meet people who share the same experience. Now, I'm not a person who has ever been to a psychic, or I don't believe in mediums except as a dress size. I don't know about that stuff. But after Bhima died, I did feel a real connection and a sense of his presence. And so that's why I wrote a book in which he shows up as witty and charming as ever and came with me through the grieving process. And so I would have these imaginary conversations with him and I'd know exactly what he would say in any moment. And so, yeah, what I've learned is that this is quite common and it's called a continuing bond, and people are nervous about talking about it because people will think they're absolutely stark, raving bonkers. Mm-hmm. But we're not.
Your parents, your adoptive parents, but the parents who raised you, your family in England, and Bhima's family, both from the book, I can tell that they recognized the value of your relationship to each other. They were very excited for the two of you to have a future together. And they were very supportive of you as you were supportive of them, of course, as they went, Bhima's family, as they went through this loss. How do they feel about the book? What is everybody's reaction to the story being told and the show, of course, too?
Well, my father died.
I know.
I'm laughing because actually I think it's the same muscle, isn't it?
Laughing
the
and
muscle
crying?
That moves when you laugh and you cry. So Dad, who absolutely adored Bhima on sight, you know, Dad died in 2022. And my mother now, I'm sorry to laugh, is unfortunately unable to recognize anybody because she has Alzheimer's. So
I'm sorry.
All I know is she did read the book before a very early draft and she absolutely loved it. And Bhima's family, I just had a lovely message from his cousin. We all gathered because in the Hindu tradition, you gather after 5 years after somebody has died. And we all gathered together about a week and a half ago. And Bhima's cousin, who I'd heard so much about but hadn't met, wrote me an email saying that he listened to the audiobook of Grief, a Comedy, on his way back to San Francisco from New York, and that he tried not to laugh out loud because he thought he'd disturb the other sleepers, but that I think the word they used was it makes Bhima chim-chiri, which means that he will live forever. And he said, you have, in an endearing and enduring way, captured this extraordinary man. And now he knows what Bhima was doing in the last couple of years of his life. And he was very much in love. So they've been incredibly supportive. And they keep saying, yes, keep going, Alison, keep going. Because we do, I mean, I am finding the response, you know, I don't know, loss, whether it be loss of a person, whether it be loss of a country. Whether it be loss of anything, it is tricky. Now, we're all going through it every single day. And unfortunately, I'm just beginning to realise at my ripe old age that there's going to be tricky stuff every single day. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have good years and bad years. You're never going to get away from pain because that's part of life. But within the pain, you can always find joy. So I'm beginning to realize, I think part of what Tutu was trying to get out there was to sort of, you know, remind people that we can spend our time in an abject panic about whatever is going on, or we can take some of that focus and look at the love that is everywhere, at the people we love, at the sky, at the lake. We live in the Berkshires. We live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. If we are so focused on what is going on in the news 24/7, we might miss the heron or the red-tailed hawk that's being chased by all those sparrows that are so much smaller than it is. And we have a choice. And that's what Tutu said to me. And I'll never forget it. I can't control what happens to me, but I can control how I respond to it. And when we go, oh God, what am we going to do? I think we can remember that we are all human beings. And that was the other thing I learned from the show and also from response to the book,
mm-hmm.
is that people who vote very differently from me, who think very differently from me, they have terrible loss too. And they also find ways to move forward and find ways to live and love again. And so I was talking with people of all different races, ages, backgrounds, and that's what's happening with the book. And I think perhaps when we're sitting there going, what can I do? Maybe the answer is look at what's around you that is beautiful. Focus on that. Focus on the love. Connect. And try and find the common humanity with people we vehemently disagree with, because that's the antidote to division.
Our guest is Alison Larkin. The book is Grief, a Comedy. I also experienced the book on audio. I listened to your beautiful audio recording of the book, in which you use your lifelong skill of accents, voices, and mimicry to impersonate any number of people. There's various American accents, but you also, of course, obviously do Bhima a lot. And it made me wonder, do you have any recordings of his voice?
Yes, I do. I have a recording because we had this idea at one point that we would do a podcast because he was very passionate about doing something about climate change.
Yeah, renewable energy, he was saying.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And he left corporate America and set up a community solar company in Bennington, Vermont, because he wanted to help people who couldn't otherwise afford it have solar. And also he provided, you know, it was a general solar company as well. But he was passionate about renewable energy. He actually said to me one day when he found out that I was a voice artist, I remember on our first date, he said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I do cartoons and voices for a living." And he said, "Can you do some cartoon voices for me now?" And I remember thinking, he's a very attractive man. And I think he likes me. The question is, will the squirrel voices be off-putting? But I can't resist. So I said, "How do you do? What do you mean? How do I do? How do I do what? How do I do the dishes? How do I do the laundry? Be specific." And then he found out I could do any.
Really, really is a transformation.
And he said, "Alison, you must put me in a one-woman show one day. But when you do, you must promise me you won't make me sound English or American. You must promise me you will do my accent exactly as it is." And I promised. And so I did.
You did. And I love the way that you, as Bhima, say your name.
Alison.
Yes. I love it.
When he wasn't calling me Alison, he was calling me beautiful woman, which of course is ridiculous, but
no.
He was biased.
You mentioned that you have been on a few dates Why did you want... And they have... Spoiler of the book, they don't go super well. They're not full catastrophes, I wouldn't say.
They're funny.
Yeah, they are funny.
And there's Beamer at the side commenting.
Yes. And that must be why you wanted to include them, because you are open-hearted still looking, but
well,
boy,
was.
Oh boy, are there jokes in the offing. I mean, dating is...
I have been on a few dates, but to be honest, my work is so interesting. And I have a wonderful life. And one of the things that changed after Beamer died, many things changed. But I realized that love really is the only thing that matters. And that the only way that you can experience love is by connecting with other people. And I've always been, despite my apparently extrovert personality, I'm actually a bit of a hermit. And I like to spend a lot of time alone. And I realized that I needed to connect with community. And during COVID, Beamer died in 2020. So it was at a time when nobody was going to anybody's house and everybody was wearing masks. And very kind members of my community in Stockbridge and Great Barrington and Lennox would leave food outside my door. And as you know from the book, which is all about the Berkshires. I have coffee every morning at 7 o'clock at Stockbridge Coffee and Tea with a number of people, all of whom are called Bob.
I know, I love it. So real.
I might be exaggerating ever so slightly for comedic effect. But I realised that, you know, when I'm saying, you know, Desmond Tutu, I mean, I think he did say he would find me another soulmate, but I haven't found this person yet. And I think I'm giving up on the online dating thing because I think it's a bit silly for me. And I just have a feeling that the right person will show up when the time is right. And in the meantime, I get to do wonderful things with community in Berkshire County. I've actually taken up pickleball, Sarah, which I love.
Great.
And I sing in a choir and I try and make the effort to speak with people who I see in supermarkets, not because I'm looking to find my soulmate, but because I often can't find the broccoli.
Well, and you're, you know, who knows what kind of connection can spark anywhere that you go. It's how we used to meet people.
It is, actually.
Your kids, how are your kids? And how have they engaged with the show and the book?
They've been absolutely incredible. And my son's a filmmaker now in Atlanta. And he was in college when this happened. And he showed up. And I think I write about this in the book. I was cooking something for him. And he'd come to see me after Beamer died to check in on me. And I realized that I wasn't actually going to be able to hold the tears back because I was making Beamer's favorite food. And suddenly the boy who I held in my arms when he was a baby is holding me in his. And I think that I've learned to not hide my vulnerability from my children, which I think is a more honest way to live. But as you know, when we're raising them, we're just trying to get them fed and off to school. And then they grow up and we grow up. And my daughter is incredibly perceptive and brilliant and going to be 23 in a couple of days. And I asked her, I said, I don't understand what this is really, this renewable energy, this feeling I have of joy and wanting to connect. And she said that she thought that it was indeed the fact that, you know, that the love really doesn't go anywhere. And I think that they're amazing. I'm very lucky to have them.
The way you write about it, it sounded like you were very surprised that your son had come to support you in your time of need. It blindsided you completely.
It did, actually.
We also mentioned that unfortunately your mother's Alzheimer's has progressed since what's available in the book. But when your father died, you tried to cancel a performance, an early development performance of the show.
I was doing the show.
And she insisted that you come back and do it.
She did. It was originally called Grief the Musical, and it was done at the Great Barrington Public Theatre in a very early version, produced by Jim Frangione, who is fantastic.
He's marvelous.
And he kind of pushed me into writing the thing in the first place. I said, he said, I'm going to produce it. So you might as well start writing it now. So he was really the instigator of all of this, in addition to Tutu. And my father died a week before we started rehearsals. And so I went home to see my mother and I said, well, what's going on with your show? And I said, well, I can perform it for you if you'd like. And so 2 days after my father died, I sat on the sofa with my mother and I performed her the entire show. And at the end, she burst into tears and she said, darling, Daddy and I had 60 years together and you were just getting started. You must go back to America and you must perform the show because people are going to love it and you've just helped me.
Oh.
And I think what probably is most helpful is, I mean, I was thinking, what do I really want to say when I was writing the show and the book? And the answer came very quickly as a couple of lyrics to a song. And it was, don't waste your time. Life's short and you're alive now. Don't waste your time. Each day you get to choose how you will spend it. Don't waste a minute because tonight might end it. Don't waste your time. And I think my mother got that. And she said, and you know what, darling? Daddy wouldn't want me to waste a minute and I'm not going to. And she did live for a year before her disease progressed and it was a great year.
I'm sure it was. It is the time, speaking of the time and not wasting it, I don't think we've wasted it, but it does go too quickly every time I get to speak with you. Alison, congratulations and thank you for sharing your story in all of the myriad ways that you have. And thank you, as ever, for coming in and visiting with me on the air.
Well, thank you so much.
Grief, a Comedy by Alison Larkin is available now in print and audio editions. To learn more and or to contact Alison, visit alisonlarkin.com. That link will be posted along with this conversation at wamc.org.
I've just seen a face I can't forget, the time or place where we first met. He's just the guy for me, and I want all the world to see we've met.
I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.